Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today, it's a singer that, it's a singer that's been around for a long, long time. Long enough that, you know, when I was a kid, I stole one of my parents' albums of this performer, as a matter of fact. Is when I moved out to go to college, I took one of them with me. And it was even, you know, and that's even one of the more recent albums. Well, not one of the more recent. That wasn't even the debut album. It was like, that's, you know, how old this guy is that my parents listened to him. Anyway, we're talking about Cat Stevens. He goes by many names. We'll talk about that in a minute. But this is a great example. This is kind of like the perfect Soundography subject, because most people know things like Moonshadow and Wild World. And maybe they don't even know the originals of those things, right? They know, like, Maxi Priest's cover of Wild World, or...
there was a Saturday Night Live sketch. I think it had Jimmy Fallon in it, and some other guitar player. Mm-hmm. And he's playing Wild World, and instead of playing the guitar lick on the do-do-do-do-do, he's actually doing it vocally. And pretending that he's playing it, kind of.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's funny. I wish I could find that clip. I thought about it this week. I just ran out of time, but I'm sure someone will find it.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Perfect. Yeah. Da, 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 da. Nice. Well, let's get into this. Well, before we do that, let's talk about your enjoyment level this week. Because I know that usually the 70s stuff doesn't always completely resonate with you, right? Like it...
Okay, so I really actually like folk music a lot. I actually, you know, people like Todd Schneider, David Wilcox, Kim Simpson, all these guys I really enjoy because I like storytelling songs. Mm-hmm. There are moments in this guy's history that he drifts dramatically away from that.
Yeah,
and sure. We'll get to some of those in here in a little bit. But overall, his classic Cat Stevens stuff, I thoroughly enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I really kept waiting for, like, because of my lack of knowledge in some of this stuff and confusing people because 70s folks kind of sounds like 70s folk. I kept waiting for like Time in a Bottle to pop up or some of these other things that we just, you know, the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which are very right. different people, but all part of that same cloth.
Part of that same thing. It's really funny you say that because Tina and I were listening to this. We were driving somewhere and I said, well, I've got to listen to Cat Stevens for Soundography. And so we start playing T for the Tillerman. Because that was the next album that came up in the lineup. I'm like, great, here's going to be some songs that she recognizes. And she knows Wild World and she knows Moonshadow and stuff like that. And then we get to the end of the album. She says, oh, what about Cats in the Cradle? I'm like, no, I think that's Harry Nilsson. But did you just, or no, no, is that
Jim Croce, wasn't it?
Oh, Croce, Jim Croce, right. See, again, I do the same thing.
Yeah, no, I think it's Croce, isn't it?
Now I'm thinking it's Harry Chapin.
It might be, I don't know.
But I asked her after that, and I said, so is the only reason you thought he did that song because his name is Cat and Cat's Cradle is in the title of the song? Which is a good point. But it's all that, you know, it is all kind of that part of that 70s folk music.
And the other thing I kept waiting for is like real versions of the songs from Mighty Wind to pop up, like, you know, Joe's Cat, Joe's Place or A Mighty Wind. Because again, all kind of from that. They were kind of poking at that this era of music really hard with a big stick during that movie.
Oh, they totally were. Yeah, definitely. And man, it's something that you see shades of every now and then. I mean, you mentioned Tori Amos a minute ago pre-show, but also, I mean, Tori Amos is a great example of this. Joan Osborne, I would think, is kind of like a modern folk singer. Mm-hmm. There's few examples of this kind of smattered around, but there isn't really as much of a surge of it like there was in the late 60s, early 70s. You know, there was space on the radio for that stuff along with pop.
Yes.
And rock and roll in the 60s and 70s. And maybe there just isn't, you know, there just isn't as much space for that. Well, anyway.
And I will say too, I think that your idea of the space on the radio is that many of these songs, I mean, protest songs, these folky protest songs were considered pop music at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think nowadays people like David Wilcox and some of these modern day folk artists, they don't have room in the pop programmed radio hour for someone like him just to pop up.
I think you're right. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see a change, or maybe people will point us to where this stuff is a little bit more frequent and popular and consistent, and we'll be corrected. So yeah. Please do. But let's talk about him. Cat Stevens, born as Stephen Giorgio in 1948, currently known as Yusuf Islam, but of course widely known by the former stage name of Cat Stevens. He's a British singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist. He developed an interest in the piano at an early age, and he started teaching himself the chords. At 15, inspired by the Beatles, he picked up a guitar. And he expressed interest in art as well as music when he was younger. At one point, he even considered a career as a cartoonist. And you'll even see some of his artwork on his own albums featured on the cover. His first stage name was Steve Adams. My God, he just does not have enough alter egos. He changed it after a girlfriend told him that he had eyes like a cat. So that's where the inspiration for Cat Stevens came from. He was inspired by the Kinks, Bob Dylan, Muddy Waters, and the music of George Gershwin and Wilbur Bernstein. One of the first songs recorded was a demo of The First Cut Is the Deepest, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but the big hit for a bunch of other people besides Cat Stevens. Right, yeah. So maybe The First Cut Is the Giveaway. It really is the what it should be called. He tried forming a band, but he realized that he liked performing solo more. And when he was 18, he recorded a full demo and secured a record deal. He released two singles, and they both charted really, really well. They were I Love My Dog and Matthew and Son, which ended up both being the title track to his debut album and a song featured on there as well. Let's talk about that. Matthew and Son, 1967. It's where you start when you go through the entire Cat Stevens discography. Album reached number 7 on the UK album charts and included the title track, as we mentioned, I Love My Dog, as well as Here Comes My Baby, which was a hit for the Tremolos later.
Okay. I think that Tears for Fears really, really leaned on that song, Matthew and Son,
yes,
for Mad World.
He's got people who've been working for 50 years. No one asks for more money because nobody cares, even though they're pretty low and the rents in arrears.
Yes, because there's that melody of da na 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 na. Yeah, totally. It definitely, like, both Tina and I were sitting there in the car going, wait a minute, I know this. This is like this is Mad World, Tears for Fears, but obviously it wasn't.
No. But there's some lifted thoughts there.
For sure. Yeah, some lifted chords. I love, by the way, that Tremolo song, Here Comes My Baby. Love that. And love his version of it, too. I was really, for a debut album, I was really into it. And I think for the first 4 or 5 albums, I think were my favorite period of Cat Stevens' discography.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I think it was a great balance of really good songwriting and just the right instrumentation to go along with it. The next album, 1967's New Masters, was released in December. It failed to chart, but it did contain the song First Cut Is the Deepest, which he sold to P.P. Arnold for $30 and was a huge hit for. It was later recorded and was a hit for Keith Hampshire, Rod Stewart, James Morrison, and Sheryl Crow.
That reminds me of that song that we covered. We talked a little bit about on the Kevin Gilbert show where he wrote it, and then like Sheryl Crow and like 8 other people recorded it. And You've got a disc, I think. I know I have a disc, so it means you have a disc. Where it has all the versions back to back to back to back to back to
right,
back.
Right. I can't remember which song that is, but yeah, totally. It was something from Friday Night Music Club or Tuesday Night Music Club,
I think,
right?
Because
that
I
was
so.
The one they collaborated on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as a musician, how do you feel about when somebody takes a song that you've released, especially if you sold it for $30, and it turns into like this monster hit? You get residuals. You can't complain about that.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, you're going to get money for it. But is it a bummer? I wonder if it's a bummer for them when people say, oh, yeah, I love that P.P. Arnold song or I love that Sheryl Crow song and don't realize that it's got this big history.
Well, I think that, I mean, I talked to a lot of musicians in my other show and I asked them questions about if you write a song that's not quite your style that you're in, the band you're in, or not quite the style you're performing in currently, what do you do with it? And there are a few people who've said, I go give it to a friend of mine who it might fit better for, or I beat it into shape to make it fit what I'm doing, or I just put it in a hard drive and let it sit until some other project comes up. So the idea of writing songs that maybe not be the perfect fit for them at the time or the person, whatever, it's totally something common that happens. And I think that people who write songs, and then if it's not something they do well with, then they move on. I mean, look at what happened with the Watchtower. Look at what happened with, like we mentioned a couple other songs where the cover version or the other versions of it from the original are actually more notable and better than the original songwriter's version.
Right. Yeah. Get by with a little help from my friends, Joe Cocker's version. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize the Beatles did that or Respect by Aretha Franklin and Otis Redding did the original. You gotta wonder if there's just a little bit of pride squashed when a song that you wrote, even if you do give it to somebody else because it's more their speed, if there's a little bit of your pride that gets squashed when it turns into a huge hit for them.
Yeah.
Maybe. Around that time, 1967, he toured with everyone from Jimi Hendrix to Engelbert Humperdinck. That'd be an interesting pairing to see Jimi Hendrix and Cat Stevens at a show.
With Humperdinck as a headliner.
With Humperdinck. In 1969, Stevens was diagnosed with tuberculosis. He later said that the time that he spent in the hospital being treated changed his views of the world and how he thought of himself. Around that time, he started yoga and became a vegetarian, and he wrote about 40 songs. Many would find their way onto different albums in the years to come. Stevens admittedly sabotaged his contract so that he could get out of it. He didn't like the way that his label had been trying to push him musically. And he signed with Island Records because they would allow him to do music the way he wanted to. About that time, he started working with Alan Davies and Paul Samwell Smith.
So Davies is a huge influence in his life. I mean, still is to this day. Davies soon became a friend, and he's appeared on all but two of the albums and performed with him until Stevens, quote-unquote, retired. And then when he came back as Yusef, Davies was right there again by his side to play with him and support him and to accompany him and be part of the creative team.
Oh, that's cool. Longtime collaborator. But boy, I mean, the name Alan Davies, you just don't hear, in the same, with the same popularity as Cat Stevens. Oh, even though this guy's been kind of like the Bernie Taupin to his Elton John kind of thing. Cat Stevens was eager around this time, by the way, to grow his audience out of just the UK and expand into America.
Can I throw out something I didn't know until I did this research?
Sure, of course.
That I didn't realize he was British.
Yeah, I guess I didn't either. It's a really good point.
It's kind of like
he was an American singer, yeah.
It's kind of like The Outfield. I didn't know they were British until we did the show.
Right, right. In 1970, he released the album Mona Bone Jacon, The first single was...
Let's go with the other pronunciation.
I like that a lot better. Yeah. Thanks. The first single was Lady Darbinville, or Darbin V as he sings it, which was about Stevens' American girlfriend named Patty.
So this album actually marks the beginning of the age of Cat Stevens. For the next 8 years or so, Cat's on top of the world. Just knocking stuff off the tables for sure. At will.
Yeah. Nicely done. This album sold over 1 million copies and was awarded gold status in 1971. And subject of the first episode this season, Peter Gabriel actually played flute on the song Kathmandu. In 1970, he released Tea for the Tillerman. This was an international hit album for him and became a top 10 album.
Things turn bad out there.
It sold more than 500,000 copies in the first 6 months, and its popularity was attributed to lyrics that spoke to common situations. The album contained Wild World, a song that was written after Patty moved on, and the head of Island Records said that this was the best album they had ever released.
So during this time, he also recorded But I Might Die Tonight for the movie Deep End, and it's the first of many, many appearances on soundtracks that he does over the coming years. There's a spot of desolation in his career where he doesn't release things and doesn't do soundtracks. But throughout, he's consistently been part of the soundtrack culture.
Interesting. Which I guess was the thing in the 70s, yeah. Right? Contributing to soundtracks and not necessarily just saying, take this song from my album, but actually writing and performing for the soundtrack. By this time, he had become established in his particular style of song styling, and he enjoyed a consistent level of success over the next few albums.
Nine of his songs, speaking of soundtracks, were used on the Harold Maud soundtrack, which really brought him to a larger audience and a lot of notoriety because that movie was kind of a big deal.
It was, yeah. And it's been such a long time since I've seen it. I remember, you know, being the younger kid and the old lady, and he's kind of a sadist or sadistic, right? Am I thinking of the right movie?
I don't know, to be honest with you, because I'm going to throw this out. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Oh, really? Yeah, I remember seeing it. God, I remember seeing it when I was really young, and I don't think I got it. I think I need to see it again to fully get it.
There are a few movies that came out in the 70s that I think I was way too young to, one, acknowledge that they came out because they were like old people movies for me.
And this is one of those?
Yeah, and I think this was one, but like there are a few like classic 70s films that I've just never seen. I've never seen like The Deer Hunter and Harold Maud and Kramer versus Kramer. I've never seen any of those because it just seemed to be not something that was in my circle of influence at the time.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a few of those as well. The next year, 1971, he released Teaser and the Firecat. This album achieved gold status within weeks of its release, and singles from this album include Peace Train, Morning Has Broken, and Moonshadow, all big hits and big covered hits as well.
Lose my plow, lose my land. Oh, if I ever lose my hands, oh, I won't have to work no more. And if I ever lose my eyes, if my
color. There was a span of about 7 months where he and Carly Simon were actually involved with each other. They both wrote songs for and about each other. She wrote Legend in Your Own Time and Anticipation, and he wrote Sweet Scarlet.
Yep.
The song Anticipation, oh, that's interesting. I know that song. It was the ketchup, you know, the song that they used for Heinz ketchup.
Oh, my gosh.
70s.
I haven't thought of that in ages. Oh, my gosh.
Slow the ketchup move through the bottle. Yeah. So I wonder if he co-wrote that with her. Was he ever in contention for being the person that probably knew that song was about him, You're So Vain?
I don't
ever remember anybody saying it was about Cat Stevens.
No, his name never came up.
No, it was always Warren Beatty and Mick Jagger. She said that it was like a combination when she finally came out a few years ago and said, all right, well, here's who it's about. It was like a combination of about three or four different people. It was kind of anticlimactic, right? Like, for all these years, it's like, oh, who's it about? Who's it about? And then it just turns out to be, well, it's kind of a mixture of a bunch of different people. It's like, oh, okay, well, thank you for that. In 1972, he released Catch Bull at 4. I'd love to know the meaning of that title, by the way. This album reached gold in 15 days, and it held the number one spot for 3 weeks.
Yep.
He used some synthesizers and other instrumentation on this album, and the lone single to chart was Sitting, which reached number 16.
I don't need to touch your face to know. I don't need to use my eyes to see. I keep on wondering if I sleep too long. Will I always wake up the same or so? And keep on wondering if
I found it to be like he'd moved out of his sweet and positive kind of feel of his songs and was starting to get a little pessimistic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that this was the first of many shifts in style. Like, actually, I guess second, because the first two albums were one style. Then he kind of landed on traditional Cat Stevens. And yeah. this was the 3.0 Cat.
Yeah,
and then when we get down to, numbers, he's totally off the rails. I don't even know.
I know. Yeah. He's gone through. I mean, if we're talking about like, Cat 1.0 and 2.0, my gosh, if you look at his whole career, he's probably on like Cat 9.0, like is how many different
9.1316 security update.
Right. He's great. He's Vista. Yeah, but that's it. I mean, he's gone through so many changes, but throughout all those changes, his vocal style is always consistent. It's just really the perspectives of his songs. And I think some of the instrumentation that changes,
yeah.
but, and his name apparently, which seems to change a lot. In 1973, he moved to Rio as a tax exile from the UK. He did later donate money to UNESCO as part of that. In 1973, he released the album Foreigner, which was a departure from what had gained in popularity. Most of the songs were all played on keyboards. And one side of the album, like a 19-minute side, was all made up of continuous music, one long continuous song.
And that really broke with the idea of album-oriented rock of the 70s, because you can't just put that on.
That's not going on radio. Yeah. For sure. No, in November of that same year, he performed side two of the album at the Aquarius Theater in Hollywood with a prearranged, uninterrupted quadraphonic simulcast on the ABC network. The show was titled The Moon and Star Concert, and this performance did include his band, but they were all but overshadowed by, of course, the orchestra. And the song Hurt was one of just a couple singles that were released from this album. Next year, he released Buddha and the Chocolate Box. This was a return to the style that gained him fame and popularity. So he said, all right, back to the teaser and the fire cat tea for the Tillman kind of stuff.
Yeah, this was Cat Stevens euphoria after Slang.
Wow, that's a callback to Def Leppard last week. Hope everybody's keeping up. This album ponders many spiritual questions and paths that would lead him later in life and have an effect on where he went. 1974 also saw the live album Saturn Night.
Oh, sorry. It is Saturn Night. Sorry, I thought it was a typo again, but it's not. That's actually what it's called.
Saturn Night Live. feels like there's something missing there. In 1975, he released Numbers. Yeah, weird stuff. A concept album subtitled Pythagorean Theory Tale, based on a faraway fictional planet named Polygor. Of course, it was less successful than other albums to this point.
This was a really weird album, and I kind of liked it, but then after two or three songs, I kind of didn't.
Yeah, I liked the concept of it more than the delivery of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about at length on this show how much we both like concept albums if they're done right. And mm-hmm. this one just, it felt like it was an unfinished thought.
It feels like the thought of it, the actual concept, feels like something mm-hmm. that Coheed and Cambria could pull off.
Mm.
But yeah. he just, I mean, it was just too synthy and too weird and too atonal and just... There are things, like I said, there are things I'm like, ooh, he's really trying something here. And then after a while, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's really trying something here.
Right. In 1977, he released the album Is It So? This gave an updated look at his Pope. Let's try that again. That gave an updated look at his pop folk rock style.
Oh, I'm leaving that in.
Yeah, leave that in. Fine. With the addition of more synths.
He sounded like Mannheim Steamroller with lyrics on this album.
For sure. Like, talk about keyboard, electronic keyboard and heavy orchestration.
Specifically that Mannheim Steamroller Christmas sound that they have, that mm-hmm. kind of tinny yep. synthesizer sound that they've got. Yeah.
Totally. Was Dog a Donut was an early techno pop track you can find on this album.
Yeah, we mentioned this. He extensively used sequencers on this album. It was one of the first albums where they used a lot of sequencers. So
yeah, that was 1977. So fairly early on in that, a style. The next year, 1978, Back to Earth. This was the last album that he released as Cat Stevens. There's just a bunch of greatest hits album. Okay, a metric butt ton of compilations and greatest hits albums that they released after after Back to Earth. While on holiday in Marrakesh, Morocco, Stevens was intrigued by the sound of the Adhan, the Islamic ritual call to prayer, which was explained to him as music for God. Stevens said, "I thought, music for God? I'd never heard that before. I've heard of music for money, music for fame, music for personal power, but music for God." And in 1976, he nearly drowned, but this brush with death sent him on a journey for spiritual truth. He was taken by the content of the Quran and started his transition to Islam. And that year that he released Back to Earth, 1978, he officially took the name Yusuf, Yusuf Islam. The imam at his mosque told him that it was fine to continue as a musician as long as his songs were morally acceptable. But others were saying that it was all prohibited. And he decided to avoid the question by ceasing to perform. In 1983, he founded the Islamia Primary School in Brondesbury Park. He later moved to Salisbury Road. The primary school later moved to Salisbury Road. He also founded Muslim secondary schools.
So at this point, there are still albums being released, but they're very different types of music. And we're going to kind of go through a few of the highlights, I guess. But it's very different styles of music.
It for sure. Yeah, it was, it's a lot of sing, chanting, a lot of spoken word stuff. I was really surprised at how much spoken word stuff was in the music that during this period. And very different from everything, like different from the sequencer keyboardy stuff, different from the acoustic guitar folk stuff. Just very, very different.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he released other albums. We'll go through the names, but also just know that in 1985 too, there was another live album of Cat Stevens stuff that rolled out called Bitter Blue. So he's still getting releases under Cat, which added to, I think, confusion with fans about what's really going on with him.
For sure. I remember such a big controversy over him changing his name to Yusuf Islam, like people not understanding the Islamic culture. And you know, there was a lot of fear in the 90s about or in the 80s about other religions, a lot of xenophobia. Mm-hmm.
And we'll cover some
We'll
cover some of the controversies later on in the show.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Very good. All right, 1995, The Life of the Last Prophet, he released. A couple of years later, why don't you take that one?
Okay, so in 97, though, the movie Rushmore used a couple of his songs, and this is the first time that his songs had been used as Cat Stevens songs since he changed his religious views. So they were
playing Cat Stevens songs, mm-hmm, but stuff that was recorded before.
Yes,
mm-hmm. the name and perspective change.
Yep.
Huh. I forgot about that soundtrack. I remember it being good. 1998, he released "I Have No Cannons That Roar." Next year was "Prayers for the Last Prophet," and then the year after that, 2000, he released "A Is for Allah," which was a children's album. He worked with Zane Bika. And it was written to teach his children the religion and the Arabic alphabet.
Dies for Deen, Al-Islam, religion with Allah since time began. That is for Dhikr, remembering Allah, and rise for the month of Ramadan. Oh, Ramadan. Zais for Zakah.
Okay, and at this point, Peach Train was used in Remember the Titans and in the movie We Are Marshall.
Again, you know, see, it's you wonder if he had any reservations about that, of like people using his pre-Yusuf songs for soundtracks.
I don't know. I'm beginning to think maybe since it was already pre-existing stuff, I could see him saying, okay, this is okay, and also I'm getting a check. I mean, even if you're a religious man, you still need to pay bills.
For sure. Yeah. You just wonder if he vetoed some stuff, if the movies weren't acceptable.
I could definitely see him doing that. That's why there's no Cat Stevens in the Boogie Nights soundtrack.
Right, because that would have been around the right time.
But yeah,
Rushmore, pretty much a wholesome. I mean, you know, it's kind of a wholesome film.
Yeah,
We Are Marshall for sure. Positive. Remember the Titans, all those things. So, yeah, I think Reservoir Dogs. no, sorry, not using it. In 2001, he released the album Bismillah, which, you know, another word from. Well, it's a word from the religion, but it's also a word you hear in Bohemian Rhapsody. That's where I know it from. 2002, In Praise for the Last Prophet. I Look, I See in 2003, as well as a new re-recording of Peace Train with Angel of War later that same year. 2004, Night of Remembrance, a live album that same year called Magic Cat Live Album. 2005, a single called Indian Ocean, which was about the earthquake and tsunami disaster. The proceeds went to Banda Aceh, one of the hardest hit areas by that. 2006, Footsteps in the Light. 2006 also saw Another Cup, or An Other Cup. Preceding the release of this album, there was a BBC documentary called Yusuf, the artist formerly known as Cat Stevens.
So throughout the research on this, Dolly Parton pops up pretty frequently.
Really?
Working with him, doing covers. In one of the controversial... Oh,
yeah, that's right. They do Peace Train together.
Yeah, in one of the controversial things, he was actually flying to the United States to do work with Dolly, and things happened. So,
right, I mean, he was denied, couldn't board the plane. I remember that.
So I feel like it seems like he and Dolly Parton have a real friendship. So, you know, Alan Davies and Dolly Parton seem to be two very strong consistents in this man's life.
That's really interesting, because you wouldn't, Dolly Parton, you would not consider to be, would have any overlap, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Southern American country singer.
Roller coaster maven.
British Islam folk artist.
Non-roller coaster maven.
Non-roller coaster maven. I wonder if he's ever been to Dollywood. It's morally unacceptable. Islam actively promoted this album and Other Cup, appearing on radio, television, and in print interviews. In November 2006, he told the BBC, "It's me, so it's going to sound like that, of course. This is the real thing. When my son brought the guitar back into the house, you know, that was the turning point. It opened a flood of new ideas and music, which I think a lot of people would connect with."
So I'm wondering if he is just like matured in his faith, where he feels like he can start spreading those wings again, or if he's become more liberal in his faith. I'm trying to figure out what, because it seemed like over time, I'm going to start letting them use my music for soundtracks, and then I'm going to go back to, you know, releasing and condoning greatest hits albums. And then I'm going to go and start performing with a guitar again and lyrical songs. So I'm trying to figure out what caused that to loosen up for him.
Yeah. No, I don't know. And I wonder if it still stays within that, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, guideline, but there's just, he's finding more things that he can do and still stay within that.
Yeah.
Within that, within the lines, basically.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look. I know that I have a feeling that I've got a cover that his son did of one of his songs, but I'm looking and I'm not seeing it. Anyway, in 2007, he released Yusuf's Cafe Session, a live album. And the next year, a follow-up to the I Look, I See album. 2008 also saw T for the Tillerman Live, so a performance of that entire album. And then 2009, Road Singer, which had a single, Thinking About You. I, you know, just to kind of pause on this album, I actually really enjoyed Road Singer as kind of a, not necessarily a return to form, but as almost pop songs, right? Mm-hmm. Like the most pop thing that I'd heard him do in that, in the 15 years prior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a really strong album. I have nothing bad to say about that album at all.
Yeah. In 2010, he did released a live album called Road Singer Live in Australia. And also that same year, he appeared in a Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert spoof, Rally to Restore Sanity and or Fear. He sang with Ozzy Osbourne, Peace Train. and Ozzy sang Crazy Train. And the OJs played Love Train. Okay, I need to find that. I had no idea. I had no idea that existed. Now I'm super excited about that. In May 2012, Moonshadow, a new musical featuring music from throughout his career, opened at the Princess Theatre in Melbourne, Australia. The show received mixed reviews, and then it closed 4 weeks early.
So we've talked about artists that have had this happen, and we used to actually ask if this was something that, you know, if they would fit in this framework. And to be honest with you, until I read that and put it in the notes, I didn't know that I hadn't even thought about him being someone that this would work with.
No, but it does. It totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. And you think of Moving Out, Billy Joel,
mm-hmm. ABBA.
ABBA, Mamma Mia, good example. Right. There are a lot of these. Squeeze even had one called Label with Love. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. When we did the Squeeze show.
Yeah.
I really wish I could have traveled back in time to see that.
What was the other one? American Idiot. No. Yes.
Oh, yeah. American Idiot's a great example, too. Yeah. That one still goes.
Mm-hmm.
And still going. In 2014, he released The Story of Adam and Creation. And the most recent thing was The Laughing Apple, 2017, the first album under the name Cat Stevens since 1978. And it even earned a Grammy nomination for Best Folk Album. And it's funny because the cover says Cat Stevens / Yusuf.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not fully... You know, it's basically him saying, "Hey, remember me? I'm also Cat Stevens."
I wonder if he says, "I'm Cat Stevens as lead singer, and then Yusuf is backup vocals or something."
Or if, when he performs in concert, the marquee says, "Cat Stevens, opening act, Yusuf."
That's like the Folksman opening for Spinal Tap.
Right, exactly. Yep.
And then also, just to wrap up soundtrack stuff, Father and Son was used really predominantly in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I love that song. It was, never mind. I might have included it on my playlist. Never mind. I'll talk about it in a second. While I'm slapping myself on the wrist for that, why don't you tell us about some statistics and some general notes?
Okay, so in 2005 and 2006, he was back-to-back songwriter of the year after 40 years with his song "The First Cut Is the Deepest." So, mm-hmm. Two separate artists recorded that song, and he got songwriter of the year in back-to-back years, 40 years after he demoed it. So, it's kind of cool.
That is cool.
So, we can't be too upset about that $30 bill.
No.
In 2001, Tillerman was certified multi-platinum, having sold 3 million copies. It was also ranked by VH1 at 206 on the greatest album of all time. Once again, I think we need to do a show that covers some of this stuff where we're like a sideshow where we're covering some of these extra VH1
things. That's a great idea. Like we do, instead of doing 10 albums by a band, we do like numbers 200 to 190 or 191 and do 10 albums that way.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I like that idea a lot. Yeah, it'd be cool.
And especially with these lists that are kind of already pre-established. It's kind of like people who do the AFI 100 films kind of things. If we'd be doing these VH1 listings.
I like that idea a lot.
He has won numerous humanitarian awards. He has 2 honorary degrees and he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2014. Some of the controversies that he's had since he's changed his name have more to do with other people's fears than anything he's done. So in 2001, he actually sent out after the 9/11 attacks, he actually sent out a release saying that he wishes to express, I wish to express my heartfelt horror at the indiscriminate terrorist acts committed against innocent people of the United States. While it is not clear who carried out the attack, it must be stated that no right-thinking follower of Islam would possibly condone such an action. The Quran equates the murder of one innocent person to the murder of the whole of humanity. We pray for the families who lost their lives in this unthinkable act of violence, as well as those injured. I hope to reflect on the feelings of all Muslims. And people around the world whose sympathies go out to the victims of the sorrowful moment. He also appeared performed an a cappella version of Peace Train for the concert for New York. He also donated a portion of the sales of his box set to the family fund that was set up. And then in 2004, his name was flagged as being on a no-fly list, and he was denied entry by Department of Homeland Security. He was denied entry into the U.S. until 2006. He wrote a song about it called Boots and Sand. It featured Paul McCartney and, again, Dolly Parton and Terry Sylvester. He later was, in 2006, he was let in with no problem. Everything was fine.
Good.
And then
there should be.
Yeah. And then there are two libel cases, one about supporting terrorism and one about not talking to unveiled women. And both of those, he filed the libel case and won because he's not a jerk.
Yeah, no kidding. Not talking to unveiled women. Wait, I'm trying to parse that out with the double negative. So talking to veiled women.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. interesting. Well, it seems by all rights and everything we read about him, obviously, a really good guy, really nice guy. You can't get as many humanitarian awards and be as beloved and be a jerk. So
I also think that regardless of your religious beliefs, when somebody dedicates themselves so full and wholeheartedly to their belief system, mm-hmm. they can't be bad. They're too busy doing their thing.
Yeah.
So regardless of how you feel about any of his beliefs, the fact that he's dedicated himself so wholeheartedly to it has some sort of, you know, show something about his character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, cool. All right. So let's say you go see Cat Stevens with the opening act Yusuf at your local concert venue. What song is the Stairway to Heaven song? What is the song for sure that he's going to be performing? I would put, well, here's your choices. Or go ahead and tell us our choices, and I'll tell you which one I would have said.
All right, so I put Moon Shadow Down, First Cut is the Deepest, Wild mm-hmm. World, and Peace Train are my choices.
And I would say Peace Train probably number one. It feels like if you've got the Cat Stevens, Yusuf Islam Venn diagram, Peace Train is the song that seems to satisfy both sides of the equation the most.
Come take me home again. About the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder. Ride on the peace train.
Right, it's you know, a very positive and not morally questionable.
Yeah.
Kind of song.
Yeah.
It's puts it out right out there. Setlist.fm. Now we do have a couple things here because there's it does break out Cat Stevens and Yusuf. So the Cat Stevens years on tour only go from 1966 to 1976, but that's where all the songs that we mentioned here come from. So we'll start there. But Father and Son, the most played song in concert for him. That was not even on our radar for that.
Mm-mm, not at all.
Followed by Wild World, which was Peace Train number 3, Moon Shadow, Hard-Headed Woman, and Sad Lisa. Where Do the Children Play, another great song. Lady Darbinville, Miles from Nowhere, and King of Trees. And no surprise, the song that the most popular cover he does in concert is Another Saturday Night by Sam Cooke, which I'm pretty sure was on one of the albums. And if it wasn't, I know the song from his performance. Like yeah. his version is as popular as the Sam Cooke version.
And what a strange piece of foreshadowing for later in the season.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're covering Sam Cooke.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Good point. In our season.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, good. Very good. If we look at the Yusuf setlist.fm, Peace Train, very clearly number one. Wild World, it's funny, all these are described as Cat Stevens covers. I guess they have to because of the way they're stored in here. Peace Train, Wild World, Father and Son, Where Do the Children Play, Moon Shadow, Morning is Broken, which wasn't even in the top 10, Morning is Broken, mm-mm. on the other list, was it? The Wind, another one that wasn't even mentioned, Miles from Nowhere, Oh Very Young, and Don't Be Shy.
Oh Very Young?
Oh Very Young, not Overy Young. Interesting, you know, if you want to sing out, sing out, which doesn't surprise me that it became really popular because it was used in a commercial as well, wasn't it? Like a Polaroid commercial or something. It was definitely a photo If I remember, it was definitely a photo commercial.
I don't remember that. But I always thought that Disney and Kodak missed an opportunity when they did not let Someday My Prince Will Come be an ad for Kodak.
or Photomat.
Yep.
That'd be perfect. I'm just taking a look here. It's funny. When you find the If You Want to Sing Out song, it comes up on the Harold and Maude soundtrack. So it was one of the songs that made its first appearance there. It was used for the commercial for the 2017 Jeep Grand Cherokee.
That's weird. There you
go. That's where it gets covered, or not where it gets covered, but that's where it gets used.
Wow.
And a T-Mobile commercial in 2009. I knew it wasn't just a car one, but they must have been taking pictures with the T-Mobile.
Yeah. Okay.
Wyclef Jean actually made a remix of the song for a T-Mobile commercial that aired later that same year. I'm going to have to look for that now. All right. Now is the time on Soundography where we talk about who we'd like to hear them cover. So obviously he's done his Sam Cooke, Another Saturday Night, which is great. But what song do we know that we'd love to hear him do a version of?
Bay City Rollers, Saturday Night.
That's right, because it's Saturday night, yeah. And it would be another Saturday night. Well done. So I'll go first. The one that came to mind, when I think about his music, when I think about Cat's performance, and I'm really just more focused on the 70s, late 60s, early 70s Cat, I think of sparse arrangements. I think of him and an acoustic guitar, maybe with some drums or bass line behind him or violins or whatever. And something that I think would fit both his musical style and even the tone of his content, at least before changing his name to Yusuf, would be the song Nothing Else Matters by Metallica, which kind of speaks to the same thoughts that he expresses in some of his music, as well as being a song that could really work with a really sparse delivery, mm-hmm. acoustic guitar and vocals.
Yeah, that's a great choice.
Well, thank you, sir.
So I picked a song by the band Chroma Key. It's not really a band; it's a guy. It's Kevin Moore, and it's from the album Dead Air for Radios. And it's the first album that Kevin released after being after leaving his band that he'd been part of. And for those of you who know, you know. And those of you don't need a drink.
Otherwise, you're going to get drunk.
The song is called On the Page, and it's very synthy. It's very piano-y. It's kind of big electronic production number-y kind of sounding stuff. But the lyrics are very much in that Cat Stevens feel of looking at life and understanding life as a variable, because the song lyrics kind of focus around the fact that you can do all this stuff and your life is never the way you thought it was going to be, the way you planned it, the way you wrote it out to be. And hearing him do just a straight acoustic guitar version of this, I think would be really, really fascinating. And I think it'd be really right in his wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. No, that'd be cool. And you played a little bit for me, and I agree. I think it would be really good, really cool to hear him do that. Let's get to our playlist. This is where we pick some songs that we heard during our trip through his catalog, trip through Cat Stevens and Yusuf's catalog, that maybe aren't greatest hits, but songs that are that I think are important ones to make sure you include on any Cat Stevens playlist. And I'm looking at this, and sure, I'm gonna get the ruler cracked against my knuckles for picking certainly one greatest hit. I might have accidentally picked two, but let's get to them. The first one I'm fully copping to the fact that it's a greatest hit. It's Father's Son from the album Tea for the Tillerman.
Just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me.
Whatever. Get mad at me. I know it's considered a hit, but it's so, man, listening to the lyrics of this song, it's such an emotional trip for me because it's, you know, advice to this next generation that you're giving, father to his son, about getting your heart broken and finding your own way and what happens when you get mad and how do you control yourself and things like that. And it's a song that I could imagine singing to my son if I thought that he wouldn't get all weird about me singing to him. So I don't. So I just do it in my head.
You made it his ringtone.
Yeah, right. But it's, you know, I just love the line, you're still young, that's your fault. Because that line, just that couplet is so, it's not, you know, it's not your fault for being young, but that's your fault. That's what you've got going against you. And I love that line. I just love the double meaning of it. Mm-hmm. So cool. The next one is from Teaser and the Firecat. It is The Wind.
But never, I never wanted water once. But never, never, never.
A song that gets covered from time to time, and coming back to the original and hearing it again, almost it just really touched me. Really sweet song. I Found a Love from Matthew and the Son. This is going way back, and this is just a really simple and great pop song. For the first minute of it. And then you get into the chorus and it ramps up and it's got this like Marvelettes or Supremes kind of beat to it. And I just love it. I love how it changes styles mid-song, and it's got a great hook. It's awesome. How Can I Tell You, which is also from Teaser and the Firecat. Another one that gets covered a lot, but hearing the original was almost like hearing the song again for the very first time.
I'm always thinking of you, but my words just blow away. Just blow away. It always ends up to one thing, honey, and I can't think
one of that I only knew prior to this, only knew from covers. And then something new from the newest release, Laughing Apple, a song called Don't Blame Them. And kind of represents, I really did enjoy that album. And also this one kind of does the same thing that This Night by Billy Joel does. It takes the melody of Beethoven's Pathétique Sonata and uses it in a pop song. And I kind of love when bands do, when they take classical pieces of music and rework them into pop songs. This is a great one too.
She won't do you wrong. Veil she wears on a long dark hair, Mary would have done. Don't blame the boy.
And you hear it and you're following along with the melody. Da, 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 da. And I just love that. Yeah. It's so cool. So that's Don't Blame Them from The Laughing Apple.
All right. So before I jump into mine, I will say this. After listening to all of his stuff, Kevin Gilbert had to have been a Cat Stevens fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I would believe that for sure.
I mean, there's no way he couldn't have been, just based on his songs and the way he did, like the album Thud, period, could be right. A Cat Stevens album.
I'd be curious to know how many different artists cite Cat Stevens as an influence, because I bet you there are tons of them. Mm-hmm. May not even be as apparent until you actually hear. It's like, oh, yeah, now that you say that, I can hear that. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so the first one I picked was I See a Road from Matthew and Son.
Yes, I want to make sure she's not cold because I love her too much. I
in a country out of the way.
I always like songs that appropriately and are able to use a banjo well. It always makes things more fun listening to it. This song in particular sounds like a song that Kermit and Gonzo would sing.
Totally. I love it. Yeah. Like a B-side of Moving Right Along.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. After the car's been flipped upside down and they caught him on the balloons, before he sings "This Looks Familiar," this is where the song fits.
Yes. Oh, I totally can see that. Good choice.
And then the second one I picked was "Time" from Mona Bone Jacon.
Time rise. Time fall. Time leaves you nothing, nothing at all.
Because I'm not saying it the way you did.
Thank you.
I don't need to put an E on this episode.
Right.
I remember hearing the song when I was a kid. I cannot put in context exactly where, but I very distinctly remember hearing it. And I always really enjoyed the balance between the swells in the music, because it's this buildup of a volume and throughout the song, and then how it balances with the lyrics. And when you close your eyes, it actually feels like time travel. It sounds like time travel.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoy it. It's a short little song, but I really enjoy it. The next one I picked was Changes 4.
From another side of the time, breaking down the walls of silence, lifting shadows from your mind, placing back the missing mirror that before you couldn't find, filling mysteries of emptiness that yesterday left behind.
It's from Teaser and Firecat. I feel like this song really needs to be covered by Blues Traveler. It needs John Popper's voice added to it. It needs a nifty harmonica solo added to it. I loved this song. It's probably my favorite song on my list.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really like this song.
You'd think that being, you know, folk 60s, 70s, you'd think there would be some harmonica in some of his music. Like, mm-hmm. you know, taking a break from playing guitar, going to play that harmonica thing that wraps around your neck. And, mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed this one. Then I picked Novum's Nightmares from the album Numbers.
My head. Why? Why was I born a nine cursed repeatedly?
This was the most interesting song on that album. It has really interesting instrumentation. The lyrics are also kind of intriguing. Being a concept album, they're going to be a little bit more esoteric. But mm-hmm. I really liked what he did with, like we said, numbers and concept, fantastic. Numbers and execution, yeah. Kind of hit or miss. But I wanted to give it credit for being experimental and giving it that kind of that place on my list that kind of represents the fact that there are things I admired about it.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you picked something from that.
Well, it's a concept album. I would be remiss if I didn't. I mean, I'd get made fun of on the school guard if I didn't. Yeah. Then I picked was Dog a Donut, which we mentioned earlier. It's from the album It's So, or Is It So? It really sounds like Kraftwerk walked home and said, "Hey, Cat, you want to whack at this one?"
Yeah, kind of, totally. Yeah, I love it.
And I enjoyed it. It really is. It's the epitome of what Kraftwerk was doing with a Cat Stevens flair.
Mm-hmm. For sure. It's a great one. Good choice. Very good. Well, that's our Cat Stevens. Meow. So thank you for tuning into that. And hopefully you got something out of it. Hope you've got a new appreciation for his music. And maybe you're going to check out some of the stuff that we talked about on the show. Because there is lots of great stuff to check out as part of his catalog. So do that. Next week, we've got a sponsored episode. Big thanks to folks who contribute on Patreon and become our high-level donors. Daniel Caramillo and his wife are supporting us. And as such, they've chosen The Interrupters as the next episode of Soundography. So I'm excited to hear. I don't know anything about The Interrupters, so I'm really excited to hear what I've been missing all these years.
I don't know anything either other than what they said in the email, and it piqued my interest. So I'm in.
For sure. For sure. Very cool. So that is what's coming up next week here on Soundography. Until then, we encourage you to reach out to us. We're going to anxiously wait for your email. We're going to stare at our inbox until your email arrives. You're going to send that to soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You're also going to follow us on Twitter. And it's like I'm hypnotizing. You will follow us on Twitter. That is at the Soundography. Of course, everything else you want is soundography.com. That's our website. That's our home on the internet. You'll find all of our previous episodes as well as links to our playlists, which you can listen to on Spotify. You'll find links to buy the music that you hear. So many different Cat Stevens greatest hits albums. I'm just going to pick the longest one and link to that one. Seems like a good choice.
The one with the quote-unquote most discs.
Right, exactly. The box set. Yeah, the most remember discs. So look for that. You'll also find a link to support us on Patreon. Hey, look, if you want to sponsor an episode like Daniel and force us to spend a week of our lives listening to somebody that you want us to listen to, Patreon is the way to do it. Just visit patreon.com/soundography to help support the show. And of course, leave...
I was going to say, and there are a list of bands that Brian has and that I have that the only way they're going to get covered is if someone does that.
So true. Yeah. we're still waiting for somebody to force us to listen to Blanket of Secrecy for a week. 1 week of Blanket of Secrecy.
Well, then we can't talk about it because it's a secret.
Dang it. That's right. Of course, leave your reviews anywhere you leave reviews, whether that is iTunes or Stitcher or whatever you use to listen to us. Click the review button, let people know, and share, of course, our music or our show. Tell people about it. So that's going to do it until next week. And The Interrupters, this is Brian Nibbett on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain saying we're going to see you right here next time on Soundography.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.